Hey, Wes here. Before we start the show, I want to share some exciting news. David and I will be hosting an AMA slash mailbag on the Miami Heat subreddit on Wednesday at noon Eastern Time. We'll be answering any Heat and NBA related questions you have, anything related questions you have, really. So go to r/Heat on Wednesday at noon. We're excited to partner with Reddit for this, and we look forward to seeing you there. Now on with the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. Here with me, as always, it's Dave Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. It's been a while, it seems, but happy to get back in touch. And, you know, still plenty of people curious about what's going to happen to Miami this offseason. Should be an exciting one. So nice to see that we're still getting questions from all of our listeners. And keep them coming because we appreciate it.
Yeah, we could do mailbag questions all day and night, but we haven't been recording daily. We've mentioned that we were going to chill out a little bit with the end of the season and all, and so because David and I have been doing this 5 days a week, just churning out these podcasts, which we really enjoy, but with less content to talk about, we want to make sure that the podcast stays fresh. We want to take a little bit of a breather after the season, so that's why you've been seeing 2 and 3 podcasts a week instead of the normal 5 that it had been. So just stick in there, make sure that you keep listening, stay subscribed, and we'll get back rolling to more podcasts sooner than later. But for now, we do have something familiar, and that's a mailbag. I don't know when the last time we didn't do a mailbag for a whole week was, so let's start with our first question. I like this one. I wouldn't offer Blake Griffin a max deal, nor would I offer a 5-year deal. What do you think his price range is? That question from Taylor Monk.
That's an interesting question, and obviously a lot of context there. Not sure. I think we probably received that question prior to the elimination of the Clippers in the playoffs, but still, that adds a certain amount of context to it.
Even more pertinent now, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's a difficult one to answer. To answer the first part as far as what the – or the second part, rather, regarding the price range, I think he'll be offered well over $20 million. I think that's to be expected, probably closer to $30 million. I think I saw an amount that was discussed somewhere around 4 years, maybe for, I think, $140 million, which would average like $35 a year. That seems a little bit on the high end. I don't know if he's necessarily going to get that from a lot of suitors outside of the Los Angeles Clippers, but that seems to represent the high end. I was also looking at LaMarcus Aldridge's contract. He signed a 4-year deal for $84 million, and you could probably make a comparable situation there between what Aldridge was in Portland and what Griffin was Griffin is with
but
the
that
Clippers.
Aldridge contract was like a cap spike before that was before the cap spike.
That's correct. That is correct. So there is definitely that changes things a little bit. But I'm saying in terms of role. I think he might have taken a little bit of a hometown discount considering he's from Texas originally. Obviously he wanted to play with San Antonio. He chose, I think, less money to go there rather than to take more money in Phoenix, which was a potential suitor at the time. So as far as the Clippers are concerned and what happens with Blake, that's a tough question. But there are so many issues there. I know that there's probably a lot to dissect with that just because of what we've seen from Blake, both on and off the court. But I'm curious to hear what your suggestion is. It's how much you think he'll probably be offered or what his price range is.
So with all the new CBA mechanisms and things moving around, I'm not sure exactly the new dynamics of these max deals and things like that. But I think that the Clippers are the only team that can offer him that fifth year, right? That's kind of the deal here, right? It's the same situation with Gordon Hayward, who we've talked about a lot, Paul Millsap in Atlanta, and maybe moving forward with guys like Paul George and Jimmy Butler in future summers. But the Clippers would be the only team that would be able to offer him a 5-year contract because they're the team that he's with now. Everybody else can offer him a 4-year max contract. I think he's going to get the 4-year max, and it's going to be upwards of $30 million, whatever that ends up being. I think it's like $35 million. I think you were right. It's something around that range. I think he's going to get it. I don't know how many good free agents are going to be available. Assuming Durant and Curry are off the table, right? Let's just assume they re-sign with Golden State. You're looking at Griffin. Maybe Gordon Hayward leaves Utah. but he'll be offered the max. He's going to be offered the full max for multiple teams. He's probably going to have a dozen max offers at least. Then, but he'll be off the table at some point. You'll have Blake Griffin. Chris Paul, his teammate, might be available, but, I mean, is he leaving L.A.? I don't know, because he was the guy that spearheaded that fifth-year player salary, or that fifth-year for the player salaries. He was the one that spearheaded that whole movement. Would he pass that up if L.A. was willing to give it to him? And I can't imagine that L.A. wouldn't give it to him. I mean, Chris Paul is Clippers basketball at this point. He kind of made the Clippers into not a joke.
Yeah, that kind of gets me into my other line of thinking about this. And you know, I kind of referred back, and you know, the timing of it is excellent. I don't know if you got a chance to read a great piece from Kevin Arnowitz for ESPN.
Which what did he write about?
He wrote last week about the Clippers and their last stand. And specifically, it was actually also the subject of a recent Low Post podcaster. So either one, if any of our listeners want to either read the piece from Arnowitz or listen to the podcast, it's a great thing. But, you know, basically broke down the nuances of those relationships in the Clippers. And obviously, I think a lot of people look at what the Clippers have been able to do over the last couple of seasons. They've achieved a lot in the regular season, but they've always fallen short there. And one of the questions regarding that team and the way it's currently constructed is whether or not these guys get along on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. And what Arnowitz pointed out was that, you know, there's a very business-like relationship there, but they don't necessarily, you know, mesh well off the court. They're not friends off the court.
I feel like it's time for, like, Chris Paul, right, is the guy that kind of generates that maybe business-like atmosphere where they're not necessarily friends, because he just barks at his teammates all the time. He's got that general, like, he puts in place that, like, general, like, atmosphere. He's got that personality.
Yeah, it's a great point, because Arnowitz specifically mentioned that, too, that he's like, he always insists upon, you know, barking out orders, telling people what to do. He's always, quote unquote, right, even when he's not. And they make that point. It's like you kind of just have to sit there and take it from him, because that's just the way he is. Even if film breakdown later on reveals that Paul was in the wrong position or that he was wrong to issue that order, he's still going to go through it. He's still going to continue to bark orders, and that's a problem. And I think it's a little taxing for a guy like Blake who I think – you know, and then this was also in the piece. When he first joined the team, he was a young player. All of a sudden, you make this move to acquire Chris Paul. He's the de facto leader of the team. But it kind of wears on you after a while. Now Blake's like in his, what, seventh season or so? And I think he's trying to make a little bit more name for himself. So if anything, I think you're absolutely right. I think Paul would stay there, and I think Blake is more likely to leave. And I saw another piece from Vice Sports today that kind of hinted at maybe Boston being the best option. I guess if Hayward elects to stay in Utah, which is more than likely, despite whatever Heat fans want and what we want, to be honest with you, I think Hayward's more likely to stay in Utah, and I think Blake might be the next best option, like you pointed out, and I guess Boston might be a good fit for him as well.
And if that's the case, where Griffin ends up just being the best free agent available, I still don't think that the Heat should – this is the second part of this question. I don't think that the Heat should give him 4 years at max or a near max.
Absolutely not.
It just – he will get that from somewhere. If he doesn't re-sign in L.A., he will get a four-year max contract somewhere. Somewhere. Maybe it's Boston. Maybe it's somewhere else. He will get it. The Heat are not the team to give him that. They just don't have the cap flexibility down the road. Even when – Bosch's contract comes off the books, they're going to have $38 million to spend in free agency. You could give him $30 million, and that means no Deion Waiters, no James Johnson, no Willie Reed, none of those guys. You're gonna sign Blake Griffin, and if it's a healthy Blake Griffin, worth it 100%. But that's the problem.
I don't know. I disagree with that, though, to be honest with you. Really? I think look, there's no denying that he's a great player, but I think a lot of the points in that piece kind of cemented a lot of what I thought about him before. Like the off the court stuff, I think, is still a concern. And I think you're paying him the kind of money to be like a franchise face, a game changer. And I don't know that Blake is that guy. I think there aren't that many guys in the league in general. Maybe you can make that case, obviously, for LeBron, Kevin Durant, and probably Kawhi at this point. Maybe Paul George. But I mean, is Blake going to be the guy that has never assumed a leadership role, and all of a sudden you're going to be paying him that role. I just don't see him being able to come into Miami. And it takes time to blend. You've seen the interaction in the locker room situation. You know what that's like. You can't just go in there and be like, all right, I'm getting paid the most, so all of a sudden you have to defer to me as the leader of this team. And he hasn't done anything to earn that. So if he joins a team like Miami, let's say at that point you lose Dion Waiters, you lose the camaraderie that James Johnson brings with, you know, the partnership he developed with Tyler Johnson. Is Goron, after working this past year and the year and a half to build that leadership role, is he going to just all of a sudden abdicate that in order to accommodate Blake Griffin? How does Hassan Whiteside mesh with this guy? Yeah, maybe on the court there's a similarity to what DeAndre Jordan is able to provide, but off the court, I'm just not sure that Blake is that guy. So you're right.
And he is unhealthy. And that everything you just said is true. Plus, can't stay on the court.
Yeah, exactly.
And he always tends to break down in the playoffs. And everybody says, well, it's bad luck. Is it? Or is that just how his body works? Because he plays 82-ish games throughout the regular season, and then by the playoffs, he breaks down. Maybe that's as much as he can give. Maybe by the playoffs, he just, that's it. His body just gives out, and that maybe isn't bad luck. That's conditioning. That's something else. Even if you get him in Miami, where, you know, he'd have top-notch conditioning, there's been too much damage to his body already. The Heat have great conditioning, and James Johnson and Deion Waiters and what they were able to do this last year was amazing, but it wasn't a miracle. And that's what it would take to fix Blake Griffin's body, I think, at this point. So all of that combined, no, the Heat shouldn't give him that. Plus, even if they had 30... Look, Gordon Hayward, you and I are on board to give Gordon Hayward $30 million, I think. But it's also not something that we were just ready to do. It's not something that is just, hands down, do it. Because this summer is going to probably be the only summer where the Heat have that sort of money to spend. Unless drastic changes in which they trade Whiteside or Dragic or multiple players down the line. Unless that happens, this is going to be the only year, because after this next season, going into 2018-19, Tyler Johnson's contract balloons into that $18 million cap figure. And then the year after that, it gets to $19-plus million cap figure, almost $20 million. The Heat aren't going to have the money to spend those years, because they're going to spend the cap space they have this season, whether it's on one max player or a combination of James Johnson, Deion Waiters, and third player, you know, number three, whatever, then those guys are going to be locked into long-term deals. That money is going to be allocated for the next couple of years. You can't sign a guy like Blake Griffin, who does break down, who maybe lives up to that contract, best case scenario, year one and year two. But year three and year four of that contract, it's not going to look good for an old guy like, an old body like Blake Griffin. He's not even that old age-wise, but an old body broken down. His best basketball is behind him. The last thing you want is a season and a half of good Blake Griffin, just like what the Knicks got with Amari Stoudemire. They got Amari Stoudemire for a season and a half of all-star level play, and that was it. He broke down the second half of that second season, and he was never the same, and he was just an anchor on that salary cap, and they could not build around Carmelo Anthony moving forward because they had that huge contract on the books.
Yeah, and they drew that parallel as well, and that's a very – I'm glad you brought that up, because – and even Amare didn't have the same litany of injuries that have affected Griffin over the last few years. So this is – like you keep saying that you think he's going to get that money, and I'm somewhat skeptical. I know that there are going to be franchises who are going to look at acquiring a big name, a marketable player like Blake Griffin, but he seems to be a ticking time bomb, to be honest with you.
I think there's an option here that maybe, if you're right, and that's what Griffin's intel says, there is a situation where the Clippers can convince him to opt in and say, because if he's a free agent and he gets 25 plus to 30 plus million dollars a season, that kind of limits who's able to pay him that kind of money. But if he gets traded, he gets traded with his bird rights. Teams can go over the cap to get him. They obviously have to give up some salary to get him. And that way they don't have to waive players, which, you know, they don't have to eat any dead cap space money. It might be easier for a team that Griffin wants to actually play for to trade for him as opposed to just sign him outright. If that's the case, and Griffin's salary next season is $21.3 million, that is a much easier pill to swallow than $31 million or $35 million. You know, that's $10 million plus less than what he could be making as a free agent. There might be teams willing to take that money on. And it's the last year of his contract. So you trade for him, bring him in-house, get him in front of your doctors, get to see him for a year, and then decide if you want to ink him down to a long-term contract. That might be an option. That might be the best option for teams, but it might not be the best option for Blake Griffin because he might not be. This might be his last chance to get a long-term deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, like, you know, it's funny. I was reading something else about, you know, Chandler Parsons and the issue that he's been with the Memphis Grizzlies, obviously. And, you know, infamously, a couple of months ago, there was that Twitter exchange between him and CJ McCollum, et cetera, where McCollum, I think, said something to the effect of, "We hit the lottery by not signing you." And Chandler Parsons' response was, "No, technically I hit the lottery." And that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, as much as fans don't want to hear this, the reality is these guys are going to try to get as much money as they possibly can, whether they live up to the demands of those contracts or not. I mean, that's, you know, he's not shedding any tears of guilt. I'm sure he'd be very happy to be out there contributing and playing at a high level, et cetera. But he's going to go home to his upteen number of girlfriends and cry using, you know, $1,000 bills as tissue. So I'm sure he's quite all right with what's gone on. And again, you know, they'd like to be playing at a high level, but if they can't, they're still going to get paid a lot of money. So for Blake, I don't think he's going to say, "Yeah, let me take $20 million this year and then see what the market dictates next," because the reality is that he's going to try to get as much money as possible. And like you said, if this is his last best chance to do it, he's going to go after it. And there's going to be a team, a Sacramento, a New York, who knows? Somebody who's
thinking. The sign and trade for Blake Griffin for Carmelo Anthony is sitting right there. It's just, it makes too much sense.
It is.
All right, let's talk about SeatGeek. SeatGeek's the smartest and easiest way to find tickets for any game, concert, play. What else can you see in arenas? That might be it. Anything that you want to see in an arena, SeatGeek's the place to get tickets for that. There's nothing like being in the arena for the biggest moments of the season or the best concerts of the year. SeatGeek. With SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get that guaranteed seat that you want for a great value. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I think I told this story before on the podcast, but a couple weeks ago, I was in the car with some friends, and they were like, "Hey, we're going to go see a concert. We're going to go see the 1975 on the last weekend of April." Do you know what the 1975 is, David?
I do not, no. Okay. It was a great year, I'm sure, but I don't know what that is.
So it's a band. But they were like, "You should come." So my girlfriend and I, we were sitting in the back seat of this car when it was happening. So no laptop, no computer in front of me, but I just whipped my phone out, had the SeatGeek app already downloaded because I'm a smart person. And found tickets and purchased them. It took 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes. And that was it. And we went to the concert Friday night, had a great time. It was amazing. Great seats, cheap seats. It was awesome. So, and that was all because of SeatGeek, because SeatGeek always gets you the best deal on every ticket. They price compare for you by searching multiple ticket sites. They give you.
I'm looking at the American Airlines Arena right now. So for all of our Miami listeners, there's some great shows coming up. For you old fans, Daryl Hall and John Oates are going to be there. But you've got, for the more contemporary listener, you've got Chance the Rapper on June 13th.
Chance the Rapper. Our South Florida listeners, I saw him live, and it's an amazing show. Go see Chance the Rapper.
Mr. 305, Pitbull is going to be there on June 23rd. Playoffs. Yeah, I mean, J. Cole on August 14th, and then you got Roger Waters, formerly of Pink Floyd. So there's some
Roger
great
Waters
shows.
Plays American Airlines Arena like once a year, it seems.
Yeah, he does. He comes down here
a
bit.
Yeah, he's great. Saw somebody wearing a Roger Waters t-shirt the other day, and I thought that was interesting. Not a Pink Floyd t-shirt, it just said Roger Waters. And that's,
so what do they do once they download the app? There's a special code for them to use as well, right?
There is a special code, and that special code gets them a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase, whether or not it's for Chance the Rapper, Roger Waters, Hall & Oates, doesn't matter. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LOHEAT. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOHEAT today, and go buy Chance the Rapper tickets. He's awesome. Or Hall & Oates. Hall & Oates would be great.
Paul McCartney, too.
Paul McCartney? Oh, forget it. Go see all of them. Buy all the tickets right now. $20 off, man. That'll get you a few years. Or a t-shirt.
Half a t-shirt.
Half a t-shirt, yeah, nowadays. All right, next question from Brian Young. Is it a good idea to be paying Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, and eventually Josh Richardson a ton of money when they all play the same position and aren't star players? Would it be more prudent to look to move either Tyler Johnson or Josh Richardson during the draft, or possibly choose not to re-sign Deion? What do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and certainly a valid point from Brian there. But I think given the fact that none of them are star players, that's what makes all of them so essential to have to the team. And I think that's
a really good point.
Yeah, because they're not, you know, because they're not kind of that singular talent, all three of them bring something unique and positive to the table. You've got Deion scoring. You've got Tyler Johnson's versatility, but you've also got Josh Richardson's youth, affordability, and his versatility as well, both on the defensive and offensive side of the ball. So all of them bring something to the table, and I think that's what makes them so essential. And you know, we talked about it earlier in the season as far as the closing role, one that we thought was going to be vacated due to the absence of Dwayne Wade, and we wondered who was going to do that. Well, during the course of the season, we saw that handled from both Tyler Johnson and Deion at number of points. So you need guys like that who are going to be willing to step up, and the fact that both of them have shown that willingness to do so, I think makes them inherently valuable. And as far as Tyler Johnson, look, the guy had a little bit of an off season, you know, an off year, a sophomore slump, if you will, following a great rookie campaign. But he really picked it up towards the end of the year as he started getting more comfortable in his role. And he has such upside, I think. You know, earlier at the start of the season, we had talked about him maybe being somewhat comparable to Scottie Pippen because of his length and athleticism. We made the recent comparison to Eddie Jones as far as the length, the defensive prowess. And look, he's on a really, really affordable deal. You've got his services for at least the next two seasons, at the least a year and a half if you want to move him before you have to make that extension before he goes into restricted free agency. And I think that might, if anything, might be his best value, is that he has such a cheap contract and he does provide so much for it. And I look at, you know, what teams like Oklahoma City and Orlando did when they traded Reggie Jackson before they had to re-sign him in restricted free agency, or Victor Oladipo, you know, as he was set to become a restricted free agent. And I think Josh is a guy that hasn't grumbled about playing time. He fits well with what Miami's trying to do. So you keep him here for at least another season and a half, 2 years at the least. And I think you can probably re-sign him into a favorable deal there. So I think there's benefit in having all those guys on the roster.
Well, let's talk about those contracts, because that's going to be a real issue. And I'm glad you mentioned that thing about Deion Waiters, because they could just not re-sign him and just say, look, we don't want the money on the books long term. As much as fun as that year was, we just can't do it. I don't think that's an option. If Miami isn't going to land a whale, they have to get Deion Waiters back, because he, at least Tyler Johnson, does the drive and kick thing pretty well. Not as good as Deion Waiters, but he could, given how he's developed, I think he can get to that level at some point, or at least be an effective secondary option next to Goran Dragic. But he can't do the defensive things that Waiters can. He tries really hard, but he just doesn't have the same size or strength that Waiters, or just natural, I think, athleticism even that Waiters has. And then Josh Richardson, as good as he is defensively, he can't do the drive and kick thing that Deion Waiters can. Waiters is kind of the best of both worlds when it comes to them.
Yeah.
And that's why you need him as a starter. Tyler Johnson is really good in that six-man role. And that whole idea that you're paying this guy an average of $12 million a year, or you're going to pay him $20 million a year in years 3 and 4, he can't be a sixth man. I think that's just a dumb way to look at it. If he's really good at being a sixth man, there's no reason to make him a starter just because you're paying him lots of money. If he's a really good sixth man, pay him because he's a really good sixth man. There's a huge value in that. There's an award for that every season. And as far as Richardson, you're right. He's on a great contract right now, but that contract will expire. He's going to be a restricted free agent eventually, and they're going to have to either extend him or make him a tender, or match a big deal from another team that wants him. They're going to have to match him to keep him. They're going to have to pay Richardson if they're going to want to keep him long term. The way it breaks out, let's just say they re-sign Deion, because I think that's what they have to do. Let's say 3 years, $33 million, just for the heck of it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that deal. So that deal would be 3 years. It goes through the 2019-20 season. Tyler's contract increases to that $18.8 million figure in 2018-19, and then almost $20 million in 2019-20. Josh Richardson will be a restricted free agent after the 2017-18 season. So that 18-19 season, they're going to have to pay him for that year, and they're going to, and that would probably be a long-term deal, so that 19-20 season would also be pretty high. So that means that between just those three, Miami's probably looking at $40 million-ish tied up in just those three guys for 2018-19, and even more in 2019-2020. And that doesn't even include the $18 million plus that Goran Dragic is going to be making. So that's $58 million-ish invested into your backcourt, four players. That takes up over 50% of the entire salary cap, just in your starting and backup backcourt. That doesn't include Whiteside's $25 million. If they re-sign James Johnson, he's going to be making $12+ million probably. That's, or Justice Winslow, who you're going to have to extend him the same time you extend Josh Richardson if you want to keep him around. So Miami's going to be rubbing up the cap against that cap number with just seven players. And that's just if you keep things the way they are. Re-sign Deion and re-sign James Johnson at really low deals, like low rates than what they lower salaries than what they could probably get on the open market. So that's assuming like a hometown discount. Just keeping the things the way they are, seven players, and you're already hitting that cap number, which is only projected at $103 million 2 years from now. So it's only going to increase by $2 million from next year as far as projections go. So I think they do have to get rid of one of them, long story short. I just don't think you do it now. There's no reason to do it now because you've got 41-game sample size of bad Miami Heat. You've got a 41-game sample size of good Miami Heat. Roll this thing back. Figure out which one of these guys has the most potential, who could be, and more importantly, who is the most expendable, and then make your decision then. And I'll lump Goran Dragic into this group of that Tyler Johnson, Deion Waiters, Josh Richardson group. You got to lump Dragic in there as well. You've got to figure out which one of those guys is going to be your long-term building piece or the one that's got to go, because one's going to have to go, at least one of them at some point. I don't know who it is, and we shouldn't know who it is right now. We've got probably by the trade deadline, maybe they can make a decision, and if they do, it would probably be Tyler Johnson, just to avoid paying any of that money in years 3 and 4. But really though, they have after this season going into the next draft. Maybe you can make a deadline deal. Let's say Miami, they have to convey that pick to Phoenix because it doesn't fall in the top seven because Miami has a good year. This team is what we think it or hope it is. So they go to the playoffs. They're able to trade Tyler Johnson for a first-round pick or something like that. It might be a situation like that. But I don't think you have to make a move now just because you're scared of paying that money down the road. I think you just deal with it later.
Yeah, I agree. Although I am hesitant to include Goran Dragic in any trade talks.
I am too. But that age, man, I mean, he's the oldest one out of all of them by half a decade.
Yeah, but he showed such promise, and I mean, he didn't play much in the early part of his career, and I think he's gonna age fine. Okay. Hopefully.
I'm with you. I just, you know, whatever. So here's the next question/comment from D.W. Cromartie. No, to anything regarding parting with our number one pick. We need young talent and hope for the future. That's it.
He's just pretty emphatic, right?
No.
We did make some points when we spoke with Jared Dubin of Locked On Knicks last week about possibly including our first pick and stuff like that. So I imagine DW is probably reacting to that somewhat vehemently, but it's interesting. What do you think on about DW's question?
Well, this pick is so important because Miami doesn't have the rights to it. We don't know when the next time we're going to have a pick this high in the draft. We just we don't. And in reference to the last question, this pick, if you hit on this pick, It can offset some of that contract stuff that we talked about. When you're paying seven guys 99% of your salary cap, that's right. Why you need to hit on these rookie scale contracts. If the Heat pick on this, what's likely to be the 14th pick in the draft, this player will be on a rookie scale deal through 2020-2021, through the 2020-2021 season. So that's a really valuable thing to have. And if they don't hit on that pick, then it's going to be a wasted opportunity to get a below market or a good player at a below market price. It's also a way for them to, if you do have to trade Tyler Johnson or Josh Richardson or something like that, 2 years before you have to pay the big money to those guys, if you draft a guard with this pick, this 14th pick, if you draft a Luke Kennard out of Duke, for example.
Oh, God.
Then maybe at that point you're able to say, okay, we lost Tyler Johnson, but at least we have this guy and we don't have to pay him for two more years. Like, we're able to – he's not Tyler Johnson right now, but he could probably be better than Tyler Johnson. That would at least be the hope. So I see why DW Cromartie here is so emphatically against trading it. It's a really, really important pick for Miami's future. However,
yeah,
I would never say no to anything regarding our party number one pick, because if the Bulls come calling or the Pacers come calling and they say we want the number one pick for Paul George, we want the number it's one gone. Pick and other things for Paul George. Pat Riley's not going to just hang up the phone and be like, no, 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 to anything regarding our number one pick. He's not going to do that. You got to hear him out. Like, if you could trade this for – if this first-round pick is something that you can trade, and we've talked about it before, but just it's worth noting every time we talk about it, the Heat can't actually trade the pick. They have to pick a player, then trade the player. So, in essence, they would be picking for somebody else, and that would be agreed upon beforehand. But if that's what it took to get a star like Butler or George and bring this window a little bit closer to contending in the Eastern Conference, you do it, right?
Without a doubt. I mean, to me, and I'm probably on the other opposite end of the spectrum as far as draft choices, and maybe it's one, as I've mentioned before, that after a long time following this team, the draft has become less and less significant to me personally. And I think if you're able to acquire a player of Butler or George's skill, you do it 100%. I don't care about hope. You know, the hope at best case scenario is that of this 14th pick, you're probably going to get a player maybe three-fourths as good as either Butler or George. You know, those guys are superstars currently, and they'll be superstars for a number of years. Whoever you're going to pick at 14th likely is not going to become that. The odds are very, very, very much against that. And another thing to me is, you know, there's all this hope and potential that you're measuring and you're counting on, but we're looking at 18-year-olds who have played 1 year against other really good 18-year-olds. You don't know what's going to happen over the next 3-4 years as they develop. And you look at guys who are very young and talented across the league, and a lot of them are going to get something that they're not going to get in Miami, which is playing time. They're going to have a chance to develop because they're going to get more time. They're going to get more minutes. We saw what happened, you know, in a few games for Justice Winslow this year when he had a bigger role to handle, and he didn't handle it particularly well. And I think that you're going to see that a lot more. And I think you're looking at maybe landing a top 10 talent, a guy who's going to change the face of the franchise, but that happens less and less than you think. And I think, again, if a guy puts up big numbers early on, it's probably because he's going to get play on a really bad team, and he's going to put up big numbers because he's going to play a lot of minutes. And he doesn't have much competition as far as being the leading scorer on a particular team. You know, if you go to Sacramento, you're going to play a shit ton of minutes, and you're going to put up some gaudy numbers because they don't have anybody else on that roster who's going to take those chances away from you. So you're going to jack up shots, and you're going to do whatever is best for you to put up those numbers. And that's realistically what's going to happen. You're not going to hit on a generational type plant talent at 14.
Well, I mean, unless you're Milwaukee or the Spurs, they did.
And then again, even that, though, I mean, Giannis could have gone. Giannis had, or Yanni, I've heard that his name is actually pronounced Yanni, but whatever.
Without the S?
Because the Greek pronunciation.
We can't just keep changing this stuff. Apparently, who's the center's name? Thon Maker is Thon Maker, just out of nowhere.
Oh, no, I know that one.
What?
I knew that. That was from Howard Beck's piece a few months ago.
Yeah, it was at the start of the playoffs. I was like, wait a minute, This guy's been in the league for a season already. We can't just now say that his name is Thon Maker. Do you remember when Dolphins cornerback Patrick Surtain started going by Patrick Surtain halfway through his career? And I was like, wait, you can't just change it from Surtain to Surtain.
Yeah.
But we did.
I do remember that.
Unbelievable.
Oh, man. I lost track of it.
I completely derailed this thing.
No, it's okay. So, no, I mean, yeah. But even that, Yanni or Adetokounmpo or the Greek Freak, you know, it took years for him to
reach the potential.
And he had the length. He had the versatility. But I don't know that there's anybody like that, just a raw physical specimen that can continue to put up minutes and minutes and minutes and develop. I mean, maybe.
And Milwaukee had the time and the space to let him do it too, because they're not Miami, right? They're just trying to build. They're trying to own the future. Like, I'm not as draft averse as you are, but I think there's a lot of importance in this pick. But I do think that the league in general, and this isn't just a fan thing, league executives, I think people that run teams are valuing these picks so much. I've pointed this out multiple times, but every trade that happened at this last deadline except one involved a pick. And that, to me, is really the value of these picks. You have to have picks. It just greases the wheels on trades. And so if somebody does come calling for that number one pick, that's why you have it, partly, is so that you can listen for it. And this is why Miami trading away all their second rounders just to get rid of guys like Shabazz Napier and whatever, whoever else they traded for, like they just gave away second round picks to get rid of these guys. That's why it hurts, because now they don't have them. It's not so much that you can't pick players with them, but now you don't have them to grease the wheels on other trades. Because like we pointed out in that Jared Dubin podcast with the Melo trade, it's not everything's not just a trade machine vacuum. You've got to beat other offers. And a lot of times what beats other offers are second round picks, mid to late first round picks that you can give away with protections. And Miami basically traded all that ammo away. So this pick is important, I think, just so that you can reload on young talent, and young talent on a rookie scale is really important, just like we're seeing with Josh Richardson right now, as you pointed out. Like we're seeing even with Justice Winslow, who is a near elite perimeter defender on a $2 million contract. There's a lot of value in those contracts, but I would not be opposed in the slightest to trading the player if it meant getting the right return. I wouldn't trade him for just some role player or some, you know, plug and play stretch four, but I would include that pick in the right deal.
How about this as a potential, you know, we've talked about it before. Let's say you can't re-sign to Deion Waiters. He moves on. Do you include the first round pick in a sign and trade for, say, Kentavious Caldwell Pope if he does a sign and trade?
You're using my own names. You're using my own people against me here, and I don't like it. You know I love KCP.
I know you're a fan. I know you're a fan of KCP.
That's tough, man. That's really tough. I think that you
did shoot a career high from 3-point.
I will. I'm gonna go back and watch all 82 of his games this season. I'll get back to you.
Okay.
I've got to really dig in on that. There's a couple of guys that I would do that for though, like Zach LaVine. He's up for an extension. Really? Zach LaVine screams to me, alpha dog on a team that is forcing other players to be an alpha dog.
Oh wow.
He is underutilized in Minnesota. He's got superb. He would be the most athletic guy on Miami's roster day one. He's a terrific 3-point shooter. Not a great defender, but he's got all the tools. And I think Eric Spoelstra could make him an average to above average defender. And he could be your leading scorer. I mean, this is a guy that averaged already, I think, 19 points a game this last season, 18 points a game this last season. He could score 25, 26 points a game. I think he can. I mean, he's young, he's athletic, he can, at the worst...
Assuming he bounces back. Guys.
Yeah, assuming he bounces back. And then, giving his youth, I think he would. You know, I don't think it was that bad of an injury, right? So, I think it'll... If he checks out, that's a name that I would be really interested. Jabari Parker in Milwaukee.
Oh no, I can't. I mean, he's already rehabbing.
He's like in that Blake Griffin kind of school of thought. But young guys that, you know,
Jabari would be nice here as the four. He'd be great, great fit if he was healthy. He would be such a nice fit here. And look, he spaces the floor. He can put the ball down. He's not in great shape, but I think that Miami would really get him to that next level. Oh boy, I mean he'd be a superstar here for sure.
He would. All right, next question. This is from Jeff Nichols. Miami will only have the space users mid level this year. I think he means the room exception.
Yeah.
What free agent, excluding Willie Reed, do you think might be attractive and available in that range? So this is, I've been trying to figure this out. And Ira Winderman of the South Florida Sun Sentinel, friend of the program, Ira Winderman, he's reporting that Miami's going to have the room exception. That's what they're going to be able to use. And that's going to be valued at about $4 million. So that's the sort of player we're looking for here. So I went through a bunch of free agents. I'm just going to list off these free agents by position that might be able to fit that range. And then I'll just kind of list these guys off, and then you and I could just kind of cherry pick and talk about a couple of them.
Okay.
So point guards, I got Shelvin Mack, Aaron Brooks. Shooting guards, Brandon Rush. You know what? I'm going to break it up a different way. Wings. Point guards, Shelvin Mack, Aaron Brooks. Wing players, Brandon Rush, Anthony Morrow, Jody Meeks, Thabo Sefolosha. Forwards, Luke Babbitt, Omri Caspi, Mike Muscala, Dante Cunningham, Jonas Jerebko, and Patrick Patterson. And then centers, Nene, Thiago Splitter, Roy Hibbert. And that those are the unrestricted free agents that we know will be available. There'll be other restricted free agents that don't get tenders from their teams. They'll become available. There might be guys that opt out and only are able to get the $4 million contract. I don't know if that'll happen, but it's a possibility. But these are the guys we know for sure will at least be unrestricted and on the market. So when I named off all those guys, maybe I didn't name somebody that you had thought of, but of all those guys, is there one that kind of just sticks out to you?
If for that we're talking about for that $4 million range or so,
yes, not really.
I would say, well, no. I mean, there's a couple interesting options at $4 million. I think that's a pretty good deal. I think Caspi's a guy that we've been linked to in the past. Mm-hmm. Obviously he was not exactly reaching his potential in Sacramento. I think he's an interesting cat that could thrive here. I think Patrick Patterson would be great here because similar to what happened with James Johnson, I think you could probably find a way for him to reach another level of growth here.
Wouldn't that be great?
And it would be.
If Toronto forwards.
We'll take all your cast-offs. We'll sign Jared Sullinger, and those guys will become like superstars here in Miami. That would be awesome. Because that would show, one, that Dwayne Casey's a little overrated and that maybe they're not necessarily developing players the way they should. I mean, I like Casey personally, but I know there are some questions about whether or not his rotations work and whether or not he's making the most out of getting the most out of players.
Maybe DeRozan sees what's going on. He's like, I want to go to South Beach.
Force a trade. I want to take over for D-Wade. That would be interesting. Nene is playing so great for Houston. He's been such a positive factor in the playoffs. And this is a guy who was contemplating retirement before the season, just decided to hop on board D'Antoni system there, and it's worked out really well for both he and the team. So, I mean, I think given the proximity to South America, the Latin American, the Latino influence in South Florida, I think it would probably be great for him to come here, watch World Cup games and stuff like that. I'm sure there's more than a few Brazilian bars he could probably hang out here, so he would probably really thrive. That would be an interesting option. I think he'll probably get more than the $4 million. Those are the names that stood out the most, I think. I guess Jerebko has some possibilities. I think the other guys like Sefolosha, Hibbert, those are probably done. Muscala, he's got range, right? He's not a very strong defender. I don't know if he's much of a playmaker either, but I mean,
he can play a little 4-5, but where he's like, he's not good enough defensively to play the 5. He's not so athletic that he should be playing the 4. He's like this weird in between.
Was there anybody in particular that stood out to you?
Well, I think I want to talk about the Luke Babbitt situation because a lot of people, I think, write Babbitt off like, oh, he was just the filler at the stretch 4 this year.
Give him the max.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to – if Babbitt is – Babbitt this year, because we traded for him, we didn't sign him. He traded for him. He was playing at a below – veteran minimum contract because he had signed it before the Cavs spike. The last year of that deal. If you're going to re-sign Babbitt, and I ragged on Babbitt as much as anybody this whole season. I mean, the 0-for-3 stat for 0 points stat line I named the Babbitt, but he played good enough where he's probably going to get more than a minimum. It might be worth Miami just saying, we'll re-sign you. If all else fails, and we actually want James Johnson coming off the bench, or we just don't want to lose the three-point shooting that you provide, the spacing that you provide, and all these guys aren't as good as Babbitt in their eyes, it makes sense to me to just bring Babbitt back on a one-year deal at this room exception. That makes sense to me. I think that's possible. I would not rule that out. But another guy you talked about was Omri Caspi. I mean, this is Luke Babbitt plus. This is a Luke Babbitt who I don't hide behind the couch every time he puts the ball on the floor. This is Luke Babbitt that could defend a little bit better than Luke Babbitt. I really like Omri Caspi. I had a chance to talk to him a couple times in Sacramento this year. Right. You know, he just seems like a guy. He's just like a puppy. He's just like in a pound. He was just like in a bad situation, a non-situation. He just needs a family to take him in and cuddle with him and just groom him, give him a bath, and just let him play in the yard for a little bit. That's what he needs. And I really think he could be somebody special for this team. Another reclamation project at that $4 million number. Who else? Dante Cunningham? 39% three-point shooting on 2.7 threes a game this last season. That's a nice stretch four option. Look, if Miami just wants to take old Toronto and New Orleans players and just make them reclamation projects, that could be good. I think, though, Nene is an interesting name. I wonder if he would say no to another year in Houston for Miami. Stranger things have happened, right? He might see Miami and say, I could prolong this career a little bit longer in Miami or whatever and do that. Tiago Splitter? He got way overpaid on this last deal.
He was just never healthy. You know,
never healthy. I wonder if you can give him this $4 million room exception if Willie Reed leaves. Maybe that's the solution here, or that might be the use here, is a guy like Tiago Splitter, who's just a veteran, who knows how to play in the playoffs, who could just protect the rim for 12 minutes a game, and you know, you play Whiteside for 32, 33 minutes a game, you bring in Splitter, just let him play 10 to 12 minutes a game and protect the rim, and for the rest of the time you're playing small ball with James Johnson at center or something like that. That could be a good use of this room exception. Yeah, those are the guys that really kind of stood out. Jody Meeks is an interesting one, too. He's super injury-prone. He's played in only, I think, 39 games in the last 2 years. But he was healthy for the last several games of Orlando's season this year. He put up double-digit points in 7 of their last 11 games. He's a knockdown three-point shooter. You know, he's a 38% three-point shooter for his career. If you have to part ways with Wayne Ellington, maybe that's something you do, is bring in Meeks and just hope he's healthy, or Anthony Morrow, who I listed. Maybe something like that, but you know, for $4 million, I like the reclamation project angle. I think that's where you go.
Yeah, I mean, I love Morrow's shooting. I mean, I saw him up close with Oklahoma City, and he was spectacular. He just doesn't do anything else.
Yeah, he might be closer to Derek Williams than Wayne Ellington, as far as just, like, can't get on the floor because he can't play defense.
That's a good point, too. Yeah, I mean, he's already had more than enough opportunity to figure out if he's willing and able to play defense, and he just hasn't shown that up to this point. So, I mean, Billy Donovan couldn't get it. Scott Brooks couldn't get him. Fred Hoiberg hasn't got it. So, at this point, I'm not sure who else he's played for.
He played for the Bulls.
Yeah, he's with the Bulls now, him and Campaign. He was with New Orleans before. I can't remember who his coach was in New Orleans. Not that it really matters, but anyway, yeah, he's just not gonna take another level. There's no more level for him to go to. So
Brandon Rush might be an interesting option. He was nice for Golden State, and then Minnesota hasn't really used him a whole lot. He would either just take minutes away from Justice Winslow and Magruder, or just sit behind him, and it would just sort of be a waste. But I like him as a player for maybe another team if somebody could figure out how to use Brandon Rush.
I like Patterson the most as like.
Me too.
James Johnson part two. I think if James Johnson leaves, you try and install Patterson on doing the exact same thing. Come here, see if you can take a year under our system. If we can't get you to that next level, we'll extend you somehow past that. But you know, we'll do what we can to make you as marketable and as much of a to reach much of as much of your potential as possible.
So if you had to pick one, it would be Patterson.
I think he fits the better mold where you can play him at the 3, 4, or 5, even in really small lineups. I think that's the kind of versatility you're looking for. He's got shooting range. He's got defensive ability. He can, you know, not necessarily harass LeBron, but he can stay with him as best as anybody. And I think that's an inherent value that you're looking for out of a front court player.
I think I agree with you, but just for the sake of being different, I'll go with Omri Caspi. If his injury checks out and they think he's going to be okay, I'll go with him. All right. Well, that's all of our questions. That's all we have for today. Thanks to SeatGeek, the friendliest and smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT to get $20 after your first SeatGeek purchase. And whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter, at LockedOnHeat, or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And we should probably... I can't believe we didn't do this already. We got to announce our Reddit AMA. So when you're listening to... You're probably listening to this the day of our Reddit AMA. So go to the Reddit.com/Heat. So the Miami Heat subreddit. David and I are going to be doing a mailbag on Wednesday that starts at noon. Probably go about an hour or so. And we're going to be doing a mailbag/AMA type thing, like what we do here, but expanded beyond for Reddit. We're really excited to partner with Reddit and have that opportunity. So go to Reddit and participate in that. It would mean the world to us. We're really excited for it. And then also subscribe to the podcast if you're not already. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.